Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Most of us forget things from time to time. We forget where we leave our car keys. Sometimes when we go to a shopping center, we forget where we parked our car. Little things like that. That's normal. But constant forgetfulness, in different ways, sometimes can signal a more serious problem. At the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, there are free memory screenings being offered to the public right now by our guest today, Dr. Paul Foster, who is an associate professor of psychology here at MTSU. We'll talk to him about memory loss, both serious and not so serious, difficulties such as Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, and other maladies, and we'll talk about how you can take advantage of these free memory screenings. Right after these words from MTSUNews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUNews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU students looking for appropriate clothing for job interviews need look no further than their own campus with the creation of Raider's Closet. Professional attire will be available for trying on in room 130A on the south side of the Business and Aerospace Building from 2 to 4 p.m. each Friday. Students will be allowed to take and keep their fashion selections for no charge. And MTSU senior Alicia Gillespie won the Project OR Cycle 10 competition at the Outdoor Retailer Winter Market January 23rd through 26th in Salt Lake City. Gillespie defeated four other collegiate finalists in a contest to design a garment for outdoor winter activities within 48 hours. Her prize is a design profile in a national magazine. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUNews.com.
Paul, thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
These memory screenings are offered totally free for anyone who wants them at Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. You have to make an appointment. And tell us what they are intended to discover or uncover. What types of information can you ascertain?
We can determine generally how their memory and their cognitive functioning is. So we give it's a fairly intense screener, as it turns out. It lasts about 30 minutes, maybe as long as 45 minutes, part of which is an interview where we'll get information in regard to, you know, if there are any existing medical conditions that might cause memory problems. You know, how is their memory functioning, whether or not, you know, they're experiencing depression or anxiety or those kinds of issues that can also affect memory. And then we give them a little battery of memory and cognitive tests. So we can look at various indices of memory functioning, like how they can recall information or how they can recognize different kinds of information. And then we give some measures of attention and processing speed as well. So based on the results of this little screener, we can determine whether or not there's any cause of concern for something that might be affecting memory and cognitive functioning in these individuals.
And the screening is strictly a question and answer session. There are no x-rays. There is no physical examination. It's just you sitting in a room with the screener and the screener asking you certain questions that give him clues as to how well your memory is functioning.
That's right. Yes, there isn't any imaging, nothing like that. It is all paper and pencil based tests and interviews.
Now, how long have you been offering the free screenings?
We've been doing the free memory screenings since September, October last year, maybe it was. Mm-hmm. And they will be ongoing and continuing for as long as I'm around. We should be offering these free memory screenings at Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. And right now that's on 1004 Highland Avenue. But February 11th, actually, all our offices are now going to be in the new location over on Medical Center Parkway.
And that's an important thing to remember, because we don't want you to get lost if you make an appointment for the free memory screening.
Right. Come to the right building, yes. So yes. Beginning February 11th, you would need to come over to Medical Center Parkway.
Okay, for our listeners who are hearing this and thinking, I wonder if it's the sort of thing that I should take advantage of. How do you think they should make that determination? What questions should they ask themselves about whether or not this free memory screening is for them?
Well, certainly if anybody has noticed any changes in their memory functioning, I mean, everybody, like you said at the beginning, everybody's a little forgetful. Everybody might misplace their keys or, you know, forget where they park their car or do those kinds of things. But it would become more of a concern if it represents a change in functioning. So, you know, they've always forgotten their keys or they've always had trouble with names, but now it's worse. Or maybe they've never forgotten where they've put their keys, and now all of a sudden they are forgetting where they're putting their keys or having these little bitty memory issues like that. So if those kinds of changes are happening, it would certainly be a good idea to come get a screening so that we can look to see whether or not you need to be concerned about that. Certainly individuals who have risk factors for degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease would greatly benefit from having a free memory screening done. Increasing age is one of the biggest risk factors for Alzheimer's disease and other dementias as well.
Getting old, however, beats the alternative.
Yes.
That being said, though, do you think sometimes some elderly people just dismiss their memory problems as an inevitable function of aging, and they don't think that it might be a clue to something else, and then they don't get it diagnosed?
I think that happens quite often, actually, where people dismiss it as, I'm just getting older. Well, I mean, your memory does change as you get older. It gets worse as you get older, just like every other physical function gets worse as you get older. The purpose of this evaluation will be to determine, is it a little bit more than you would expect with just age alone? And if we find that it is, then they might benefit from a more thorough evaluation so that we can treat that.
Is there anything that you can say in a general way? We don't want to tip our hand as to what the exact questions are for people going into the screening. That wouldn't be fair. It would be like prepping for a test, and this is an endeavor for which you want spontaneous, honest answers. Mm-hmm. But can you describe what the screening questions are like in a general way?
Generally, there are a list of words that people will be read to and then asked to recall. And then in another portion of the test, they may be asked to recite some digits. The examiner will say some numbers, and then the person has to repeat them back. And then there are some general questions that the examiner might ask as well, just kind of general knowledge, information kinds of questions. The examiner might ask them to list words based on some predetermined criteria as well.
And this is not a test that you can bone up for. And as a matter of fact, I took it, and I found it to be rather fun. I enjoyed the challenge of putting myself to the test, of being able to remember what I needed to remember and to answer the questions as well and as thoroughly as I could. So you could have a really good time with this. Just go in there relaxed and free. And know that helping you in this are some graduate students from here at MTSU who are very professional and very courteous and very thorough. I found the gentleman who worked with me was. Tell us a little bit about their role and what they get out of this.
The graduate students are part of the clinical psychology master's program here at MTSU, and this serves as one of their practicum experiences. So as part of their master's degree, they have to obtain 300 hours of practicum experience, which is, a practical experience somewhere, in the community. Mm-hmm. So this, for the students that are interested in doing neuropsychology-related work later on, this represents an opportunity for them to get their feet wet, so to speak, to begin getting some experience in what neuropsychological assessment is. So the graduate students actually perform the memory screenings under my supervision. So they see the patient, they give the tests, they score the tests, they write a little report on it, and then I review everything with the graduate student and then sign off on it.
And will most of these students go on to become clinical psychologists ultimately, or might they go into other areas of the discipline?
Most of the students are mostly interested in the neuropsychology, so they are planning to apply for PhD programs in clinical psychology with a specialization in neuropsychology.
We'll have more about memory and how you can improve yours and get a status report right after this. This is MTSU on the Record.
The American Democracy Project is a nonprofit initiative which strives for greater voter registration and civic participation among young people at MTSU and at campuses nationwide. Through encouragement from professors and peers, young adults are shown the value of being more active citizens in their community, their state, and their nation. ADP seeks to nurture programs that raise the campus community's level of engagement with society. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
Dr. Paul Foster, Associate Professor of Psychology, is our guest. We're talking about free memory screenings that are available through the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic that are administered under his supervision. Let's talk about some of the more serious evidences of memory loss, and starting with Alzheimer's, which is probably one of the scariest words you can ever hear, because there is no cure, and people who suffer from it literally break your heart, whether you're related to them or not, because you just wish you could reach into the brain and do something for them. Tell us how Alzheimer's occurs, basically, from a layperson's, in a layperson's perspective.
Well, Alzheimer's presents initially with memory problems that are kind of subtle, as you described earlier. You know, they forget, you know, people's names, or they forget where they parked their car, or they may get lost, you know, suddenly when they're driving, they don't remember where they're going, or they don't remember how to get to their location, even on familiar routes at times. They may start forgetting conversations that they've had with people. And the reason for this is that the pathology of Alzheimer's disease affects a structure in their brain called the hippocampus, which is responsible for forming new memories. So they have a very hard time forming new memories. And as the disease progresses, it starts involving more and more of the brain, including the frontal lobes, which is involved in decision making and planning and those kinds of things. So as the disease progresses, you not only have more severe memory impairment, but you also have other cognitive deficits superimposed on top of that. And then eventually they, you know, toward the later stages of the disease, they begin even losing old information. Old memories are then lost, like who their relatives are. They may not recognize.
Does the brain literally get smaller in Alzheimer's?
There is what we call atrophy, which is getting smaller, and that's a result of the neuronal death that occurs. Now, some of that is to be expected with aging. I mean, as everybody ages, their brain shrinks in size some, so that's normal for aging. But with Alzheimer's disease, it is a little bit more severe, and earlier in the disease, it affects the hippocampus more, and that's just because of the pathology is attacking the neurons in those areas of the brain, and as the neurons die, the brain shrinks.
How can you tell the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? Senile dementia, what is commonly called by grandma and grandpa, senile dementia. Yeah.
Well, historically, probably when most people said dementia, they were referring to Alzheimer's disease. Dementia is a rather large umbrella term that can include a bunch of different types. Alzheimer's disease is a type of dementia. Vascular dementia is a type of dementia. Lewy body dementia is a type of dementia. So there are different kinds of it, of which Alzheimer's is one of the most common.
What is Lewy body dementia?
Lewy body dementia is another form of dementia that presents with a common triad of symptoms. They have memory impairment, although the memory impairment isn't as severe as you see in Alzheimer's disease. But the hallmarks of Lewy body dementia would be they experience hallucinations. Common hallucinations are like of people, you know, maybe their spouse who had died, you know, 10 years earlier, all of a sudden they're seeing them and speaking to them. So they see people, you know, in their house or in their bedroom. Another one of the common symptoms of it is fluctuations in their level of arousal and alertness. So you may be talking with them and they're, you know, they're fine and they're very clear. But then, you know, an hour later or maybe the next day, they're like on another planet. You know, they're looking through you, not at you when you're speaking to them, and they have very low arousal.
Kind of a catatonic stare, kind of just deer in the headlights gaze.
Yeah, sort of a stare, I would say. That's a common complaint that the significant others often tell me, is that they're just staring off into space, mm-hmm. is what they'll say. So those are some of the common symptoms that differentiate Lewy body dementia from Alzheimer's dementia.
How common is Lewy body dementia?
Not near as common as Alzheimer's disease. I don't know. I would be scared to throw out a figure. I'm wanting to say maybe 10 or 15%, although, again, I'm a little scared of that figure. Alzheimer's disease certainly takes the lion's share. Mm-hmm. Although in the South, I have actually seen probably as many vascular dementia patients as I have seen Alzheimer's disease patients. Mm-hmm. Those two disorders are the ones that I see by far the most, with Lewy body dementia coming in third, but it's a real distant third.
And vascular dementia is caused by heart attacks and strokes?
It's caused by little strokes, and you may not even know that you're having them at the time. I mean, we're talking very, very small little strokes that come from not necessarily heart attacks, but the risk factors are high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Diabetes is another risk factor. Certainly if you have a history of strokes like transient ischemic attacks and those kinds of things, those are all risk factors. So these strokes individually, you know, okay, but over a period of time, they accumulate and the effects accumulate and they form a type of dementia where they have a different pattern of memory and cognitive impairment as somebody that has Alzheimer's disease.
If someone starts suffering a series of TIAs or mini strokes, are there things that they can do to stem the tide, to, you know, try to prevent further strokes or even larger strokes from occurring in the future?
Yes, and it would be some of the same recommendations that I would give even to people with Alzheimer's disease, actually, and that's you eat healthy, eat a well-balanced diet, you know, cut out certainly fried foods and things with a lot of fat in them, and be healthy in terms of exercising as well. I mean, it's very important. You know, a lot of people retire and they get kind of sedentary and they sit around a lot and they don't do much anymore, and that is not good for your brain. So it's important for them to exercise, to take daily walks or even join a gym, you know, and work out on the treadmill and do cardiovascular kinds of exercises. It's good for your body and it's good for your brain as well. So those are certainly some top recommendations that I would make for those individuals.
What about Parkinson's disease?
Yes, Parkinson's disease is another form of dementia. Not all patients with Parkinson's disease will go on to develop a Parkinson's disease dementia, but a significant number of them will go on to develop a dementia. And it is what we call a subcortical dementia, where it's affecting the connections that the frontal lobes have with the rest of the brain. So that kind of dementia actually looks a lot different than Alzheimer's disease as well. But it has a lot of similar presentations with vascular dementia, because vascular dementia results in many of the same problems in terms of cutting off the frontal lobes from the rest of the brain.
We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
The Experiential Learning Scholars Program at MTSU gives students a chance to go outside the classroom and obtain hands-on experience in their chosen fields of study. They'll have the opportunity to give something back to the community through service learning as they gain acceptance for graduate study. Students should be able to select EXL-designated courses from major requirements and general studies requirements to complete the 16 to 18 hours of EXL coursework. For all of the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about memory maladies, and free memory screenings with Dr. Paul Foster, who is an associate professor of psychology here at MTSU. You were talking a little bit earlier about eating healthy and getting exercise in order to stave off future TIAs that might diminish memory. How do you feel about working crossword puzzles and Sudoku and other types of brain teasers, if you will? Is the research clear on whether or not that really constitutes good brain exercise that will help you maintain memory over the long haul of your life?
Yeah. There's certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence for, you know, crossword puzzles having a protective effect against neurodegenerative diseases, and I think they do. I mean, any time you're using the brain is good. You know, sitting around watching the TV, you know, vegging out, I guess as people call it, you know, is not good activity to be engaging in. So I think there is a benefit to crossword puzzles, but it goes, in my view anyway, beyond just filling out the crossword puzzle. It involves more, you know, you work the crossword puzzle, but then for the ones that you don't have an answer, you go find the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is a process of attempting to improve yourself, improve your knowledge about things. And it's that process that really has, I think, the most beneficial effect.
Not just doing two-thirds of it and the ones that you don't know, to throw the puzzle aside and leave it there, but maybe go on the internet or go into books and try to improve the total store of knowledge that you have by looking things up and seeing, oh, that having an aha moment and then committing it to memory. Is that what you mean?
Yes, that is what I mean. Going and finding the answers for the things that you don't know. You know, it's like reading a book. Mm-hmm. You know, reading is good. Certainly, reading is very good for you, and reading is good for you as you age. But it's not just reading for the sake of reading. It's reading for the sake of improving yourself and what you know about things and about life. So it's reading with the intent of learning and maybe using that which you are reading. It's studying, really.
And I know that you have lectured at the annual Adventures in Learning series that is put on by an interfaith coalition here in Murfreesboro. For the past 3 years, you've lectured on the aging mm-hmm. brain, so you certainly believe in lifelong learning, taking classes, and that kind of thing. And most of the people who attend Adventures in Learning are 55-plus, so they're in that age mm-hmm. range where they need to really start thinking about this as a serious issue, right?
Right, it's a very serious issue. Don't retire and then give up on life, certainly. Don't retire and just sit around and do nothing. Engage in hobbies. Engage in activities that you want to improve yourself on, not just for the sake of being active, but for the sake of trying to improve yourself.
Have you ever questioned your own memory? You know, you forgot something, you left something behind, or you missed an appointment or something and thought, oh, here's the neuropsychologist, and he can't remember something, and then you feel kind of silly.
Yeah. That happens frequently. Actually, I think I'm teased by the staff at MMC quite a bit about, you know, me needing to give myself an evaluation because, yeah, certainly, I mean, I forget things. Everybody forgets things, mm-hmm. you know, and now and then. So that's to be expected. These diseases that cause memory impairment, though, take it above and beyond that, mm-hmm. really.
What about people who suffer a traumatic brain injury? People who have fought in wars and have suffered concussions, athletes in contact sports, violent sports who suffer concussions. How much can the brain withstand in terms of physical impact before there comes a price to pay?
That's really difficult to answer because everybody is different. Everybody's, you know, has their own individual tolerance, I would say, for that kind of thing. I mean, there is a form of dementia called dementia pugilistica, which is caused by repeated, you know, head injuries, repeated strikes to the head for one reason or another. You know, and one person might be able to withstand that for many years, and another person might have, you know, get their head hit one time and it really caused a lot of problems. So, you know, concussions, head injuries, traumatic brain injury, I mean, those are all things that can certainly affect cognitive functioning and memory functioning as well.
Are you following the concussion research that is going on right now, since it's such a big topic in the National Football League with former players filing a multimillion-dollar lawsuit against the league? I understand they're looking at research being done at the University of North Carolina and other places.
I haven't followed it intensely. I mean, I do know a little bit about it. They have done research with this for many years now. I mean, we know that, you know, the contact sports, there may be a price to pay. I mean, if you have repeated concussions, it's going to affect memory and cognitive functioning, you know, over a period of time in particular. I mean, if they have a concussion and then they go out and play again, you know, too soon and experience another concussion, I mean, that's really going to hurt brain functioning. So, and it's not just football. It's, you know, soccer, too. I mean, those individuals, you know, are using their head to hit the soccer ball frequently. And over a period of time, doing that repeatedly isn't so good on the brain.
We'll take a break right here, and we'll be back with more MTSU on the Record in just a moment.
The annual Baseball and Literature and Culture Conference at MTSU welcomes scholars from all over the country to present papers on numerous baseball-related topics. Their research highlights the national pastime's impact on everything from race relations to the economy, and the sport's depiction in poetry and novels. The conference has attracted all-stars and Hall of Famers, including Denny McClain and Ferguson Jenkins. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Foster, who has graduate students here at MTSU conducting free memory screenings for anyone who wants them at the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. What interested you enough about this discipline that made you want to make it your life's work?
That's a hard question to answer because, I mean, this isn't certainly what I wanted to do, you know, as I was growing up. Mm-hmm. Even when I was in college, I didn't know that this was what I wanted to do. And even when I went into my master's degree, I didn't know this is what I wanted to do. I didn't get into this until I actually got into a doctoral program, as it turns out. When I started, you know, my doctoral training at Virginia Tech, I went in under Dr. David Harrison up there. And that's when I really got into neuropsychology. And then as I was going through the program, I developed an interest in degenerative diseases that then continued to develop as I went on my internship and then my fellowship down at University of Florida.
What do you think about mnemonics? Jerry Lucas, the former New York Nick, wrote a book about mnemonics, devices that help people remember things by forming word associations in their minds, one with another. Do they work?
They do work. There is a tremendous amount of research showing that they work, and there are a lot of different mnemonic techniques. Some of them rely on elaboration, such as, well, there's one technique called semantic elaboration, and basically you're taking the information that you're trying to remember, the information that you want to recall later, and you are elaborating on it. So you're adding details to it, basically. You might be relating it to things that you already know. You create, like if it's a list of words, you know, or a grocery list that you want to remember, then you create a story, you know, around the list. And that's called semantic elaboration. There are several techniques. There's, you know, a peg word system. The method of loci is a system. And they are generally effective in helping people recall information.
If people want more information about the free memory screenings that you're offering at the Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, how can they get in touch?
They could call Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, the Department of Neurology at Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, and that is 615-867-8090. They could either call Murfreesboro Medical Clinic or they could email me at MTSU, and that email is available on the MTSU Psychology Department website.
Remember, Murfreesboro Medical Clinic right now is on Highland Avenue, but as of the 11th, it will be on Medical Center Parkway, right?
Right.
Okay. So that's something you have to remember.
Yes. Yes. If you want the free memory screening or any other evaluation, yes, after the 11th, come out to Medical Center Parkway.
And please take advantage of it. After all, it's free. It will not cost you a dime. The results will be kept absolutely confidential. You mm-hmm. will receive the results in the mail, and it will tell you a lot about yourself that you probably need to know in order to improve your quality of life. Dr. Paul Foster, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.